Greetings, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the ABC Health podcast series, part of our ongoing thought leadership dialogue on advancing Africa's healthcare transformation through innovation and strategic collaboration. I am Adekunle Dalton-Oke. I head communications, working directly with Dr. Maurice Atoki, the Chief Executive Officer of the African Business Coalition for Health, ABC Health, where we are committed to mobilizing private sector leadership and fostering public-private partnerships to drive sustainable, scalable, and high-impact healthcare solutions across the continent. We recognize that digital innovation, particularly artificial intelligence, is rapidly redefining the possibilities within healthcare delivery, from diagnostics and treatment to system-wide efficiency and patient engagement. Today's conversation is centered on a critical and forward-looking theme, leveraging AI technology to provide affordable, world-class medical care in Africa, opportunities and challenges. I will provide a very brief synopsis so everybody would understand exactly where it is that we are coming from for this podcast. Across Africa, healthcare systems continue to grapple with structural constraints, including limited infrastructure, workforce shortages, and inequitable access to quality care. Artificial intelligence presents a compelling opportunity to address this gap by enabling predictive analytics, enhancing clinical decision-making, optimizing resource allocation, and expanding access through telemedicine and remote care model. When effectively deployed, AI has the potential to significantly reduce the cost of care while improving quality and outcome. However, the integration of AI into healthcare systems is not without its complexity. Key challenges persist around data availability and quality, infrastructure readiness, regulatory alignment, ethical considerations, and the need for local capacity building. Furthermore, ensuring that AI-driven solutions are contextually relevant and inclusive remains essential to achieving equitable impact across diverse populations. The conversation, therefore, is not simply about adopting technology, but about designing and implementing AI-enabled health systems that are resilient, interoperable, and responsive to Africa's unique healthcare landscape. To explore these opportunities and challenges in depth, I am pleased to be joined by a distinguished leader at the forefront of healthcare innovation in the person of Katrina Prentice, the founder and chairwoman of Zach Health Limited. Katrina is a visionary healthcare leader with a strong track record in pioneering innovative medical solutions across Africa. She is the founder and chairwoman of Zach Healthcare Limited, and she established Africa's first regenerative orthopedic and sports medicine clinic in June 2021. Her expertise spans artificial intelligence, telemedicine, and digital health innovation, with a focus on delivering high-quality, affordable, and accessible healthcare services. Katrina is widely recognized for her ability to lead cross-functional teams, building local capacity through the training of healthcare professionals, and fostering strategic international collaboration. Her work is driven by a clear mission to transform healthcare delivery in Africa by leveraging cutting-edge technologies and scalable innovation model. Katrina, we are delighted to have you here with us today.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much. Thank you for that lovely introduction. Yes, you're all welcome to this call. And thank you for Dr. Maurice, CEO of ABC Health, for her very generous and kind invitation. I'm happy to be here today. And thank you, Adekunle, for your introduction.
All right. You know, I'm sure that our audience is looking forward to an engaging and intellectually rich discussion, and I can guarantee them that they will not be disappointed. To set the stage for today's discussion, let us begin by grounding our conversation in the broader context of technological transformation in healthcare. Artificial intelligence is no longer a future concept. It is actively shaping how healthcare is delivered, accessed, and scaled across the globe, including in Africa. I will kick off with a question that will help us establish a foundational understanding of AI is relevant and its transformative potential within Africa's healthcare landscape. So, Katrina, today it is impossible to talk about technology without speaking about AI. Why is this technology becoming such a crucial tool in addressing Africa's healthcare gap and enabling the delivery of world-class medical care across the continent? Over to you.
Yes, great question. AI is moving at lightning pace, and so to keep up with it is a challenge, actually. But it is critical because it allows Africa to leapfrog clog traditional healthcare constraints. And at Zach Health, we believe something very simple, that access to quality healthcare should not depend on where you live, how much you earn, or how close you are to a hospital, for instance. Our mission is very clear at Zach Health, to reform healthcare across Africa, which admittedly is quite a feat for Caucasian women from the UK with a non-medical background. But I'm on a mission, and we are here to reform healthcare across Africa. So engaging artificial intelligence is absolutely key. And there's a certain amount of education. There's lack of knowledge for some doctors. Doctors get a bit upset sometimes when you talk about artificial intelligence. It's very important to mention they're not going to lose their jobs. Artificial intelligence will accompany them. So it's like a co-pilot. A friend of mine's just had a cancer removed from his tongue. It's a very difficult operation. And a robot did it. So one of the best, if not the best surgeons in the country did this operation with a robot. So we need to have a bit of a paradigm shift in terms of how we're thinking and understand its relevance, certainly now, but certainly for the next decade, if you will. So we're dealing with limited infrastructure at the moment in the UK and across Africa, across the world. There are clinician shortages. And so a large populations are underserved. And this isn't just Africa, as I said, it's a global issue. So artificial intelligence can change that. And help limit the time, for instance, that you spend with a doctor. Artificial intelligence can take some of that burden. I'll just give you an example. So in the UK, possibly the same where you are, a doctor's appointment is 12 minutes. So you've got to spend 3 or 5 minutes talking to the doctor, and then he's going to put a cuff on you. He's going to start taking your blood pressure, whatever. And then he's going to start diagnosing what you've got. With artificial intelligence that we have, we can read 11 biomarkers in 60 seconds with 95 to 100% accuracy with medical grade certifications. So we can cut down that time. So when you come in to see a doctor, he's got your stats already. And if you were going to see a nurse, we can obviously cut her time down as well. So yes, you can still see the nurse, but we can offer that service whereby more patients can be seen by doctors and by nurses if you compress using artificial intelligence. So that's one of the things. This is for obviously clinics, hospitals. So that's one way that we see this is a really useful tool. Imagine how many more patients, I mean, there are many doctors listening, how many more patients could you see in a day if you were to use artificial intelligence and if you were to use potentially this AI health assessment tool that we have? So moving into telemedicine and adding artificial intelligence within that methodology is also something that we do. It's called plug and play. So we integrate telemedicine with artificial intelligence so that that becomes a greater effect. And just also a really interesting one is doctors spend a lot of time writing up notes. If you use artificial intelligence, it can be in the meeting, just like a Zoom meeting, we use it to do notes after a meeting. We can use it in the surgery as well. So it will again cut down how much time a doctor is spending writing notes or typing them up. The artificial intelligence is not 100% accurate. I want to put that out there right now. We still need doctors, we still need nurses, and you still need to check and double check. The accessibility, the portability of artificial intelligence really enables three structural shifts: limited access to mass access, late stage treatment to early detection, and fragmented care to standardized delivery. This is how Africa can deliver world-class care without replicating expensive, potentially expensive Western systems.
Okay, that is very interesting. And you mentioned something that I would definitely come back to at some point. But I would like to ask you a second question. And it's actually two questions in one.
Yes.
So first, there seems to be a lot of reluctance amongst health practitioners, particularly in Africa, when it comes to AI adoption, which is something you mentioned earlier. How is Zach Health overcoming this barrier? That's question one. And question two, how is AI being applied in African healthcare across diagnostic, predictive analytics, patient management, particularly from the perspective of your organization that has increasing investment in technology?
Yes, it's a good question. Thank you. So, first one, how are we overcoming, or how does one overcome? It's really about education and demonstration. So, if you don't know something, you've got to learn about it. So, what we're doing at Zach Health is providing training, and we're providing video tools so that it explains very clearly what we do, how you can do it, how doctors can do it, nurses can integrate, and that's pretty much it. It's great to demonstrate. We do obviously proof of concepts where you can use our technology free of charge, so that you can try it out and see if it works for you. At the moment, we're using artificial intelligence in two main areas, three main areas really. So the first one is AI health assessments. So as I explained, using a smartphone, using a camera on a smartphone, we can read up to 11 biomarkers in 1 minute. So that can be used in healthcare facilities, so at the clinic, in the hospital, and also very importantly, at home. So for instance, we have antenatal clinics using this. So if I was a mum and I came into my clinic today, or your clinic rather, and you would check me out using this initially, using this tool. We've been running POCs across antenatal clinics in Rwanda, and also in Nigeria. So after I've had my appointment, I go home, right? You've checked me out. I go home, but we don't know how I am. And there's a shocking statistic that 70% of pregnant mums die across the world. 70%. This is a huge number. So this we need to change. So making giving birth an issue where you're going to live, you're not going to die, is very, very important. So it's staggering that it's in Africa. That figure, 70%, is saying that the concentration is there. So what we can do is we have what we call an early warning system, which enables the mum to be monitored. So she's left the antenatal clinic, she's gone home, and she's doing maybe one scan a month or one scan a week, and we're able to have a silent early warning system, so the mum won't know anything about it, but it will trigger an SMS or a WhatsApp message or even a call to her local doctor to say that mum's taken a reading and we need to call her, contact her, check she's okay. So part of the reason this 70% figure is there is because we fear, we don't know what to do. Mum doesn't know what to do. She can't afford to go back to the clinic. She's also too remote. These are some of the reasons why these mortalities are so high. So what we do and how it's implemented in the system is just as I said. So in clinic, we also use artificial intelligence for medical insurance, so it mitigates the risk. So if I was to take out an insurance policy right now, I would fill out a form. It might be online or it might be in your office, in the insurance office, and you have no idea about my wellness. Now, some insurance companies will pay, I'll just put it into dollars, they might pay $10 for me to go to a hospital and have some tests. Well, what if we could do a scan and that would mitigate the risk? So obviously, if I've had poor readings, absolutely send me off to a hospital. But if I've got all green readings, we have a traffic light system, red, yellow, and green. So if I've had all green, all good readings, I would have saved you a huge amount of money. You won't be spending $10 to send me to a clinic. So it mitigates the risk. And again, in the corporate market, the corporate social responsibility and the understanding of NCDs is very, very important. So there's an obligation to understand what is happening with our employees. So we use it there as well. But to move broader, we have other products as well. But virtual hospitals are very, very important in days ahead. Being able to limit the amount of hospitals that need to be built, some of this can be done through virtual hospitals. So those are two areas in terms of how it's being used. Managing patient care, we have telemedicine, we have EMR systems. And so I think what I found as I've traveled through Africa is, unlike the UK, where we have NHS, our records, if I go to Scotland, in the north of England, my medical records are sitting there. If I go to the east, west, wherever, my medical records are there. And I think the challenge we have in Africa is that the EMR, the electronic medical records, are not talking to one another, and there is no one size fits all. So that's quite challenging. Through telemedicine, we can ensure that your medical records, let's say we were in Lagos and I had to go to Abuja for some treatment. We would make sure instead of you picking up bundles of paper documents, we can ensure through our systems that your medical records reach wherever we've sent you or wherever you're going. So again, artificial intelligence can make that a seamless journey. So those are some of the areas. I suppose one area I should really hit on here is we have what we call AI predictive software, which again is able to scan and scale up massively to check for four main areas for somebody's eyesight. So we're not reading whether you need reading glasses or not, but we're scanning for macular degeneration, cataracts, diabetic retinopathy, and refractive errors. River blindness is a major issue across Africa. We can also not detect that specifically, but out of those four tests that I've just mentioned, we can see, predict that you may be having river blindness. So eye specialists can see through the results whether that's going that way. And the whole thing of AI is instead of reactive medicine, reactive healthcare, we're now being able to predict. And I think that's a real clear note for us here. We need to predict, and we need to offer preventative healthcare now. So predictive analytics is one of the areas that artificial intelligence can do.
Wow, Katrina, this is getting very interesting. I mean, the benefits of AI-driven health technologies are clear. Obviously, there is an encouraging level of adoption of AI in Africa. And as this adoption grows, the appetite of investors like Zach Health increases.
Yes.
However, it is still critical to examine the broader enabling environment required to support sustainable scale and impact. So I'm going to ask, what framework are needed to harmonize cross-border AI-driven healthcare innovations and ensure patient safety across different jurisdictions?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. So data governance is really important. So to scale AI across Africa, we need three main areas. The first one is data governance. Then I'll go back to that. Clear regulatory classification and interoperability, which we talked about, or you talked about at the top of the call. So going back to data governance, very, very important. So Zach Health ensures that the data is hosted locally. So this is one thing that we do. It's anonymized. There has to be strong encryption. So we encrypt for both the front end and the back end, which is very, very important for trust and compliance. So that is really clear. It has to be secure. Of course, we have all the GDPR, ISO, HIPAA, etc. compliance. Those certifications are very, very important. So then clear regulatory classification. Again, we are a wellness tool. We have certification for diagnostics, but it's used as a wellness tool. When you start using artificial intelligence for diagnostics, you're moving into very different regulations. And you need to be careful. So we have that ability, but we don't use it that way, and that's not how the health profession uses it. It's used as a wellness tool. As I said, it's 95% accurate, but it steers us clear of diagnostics, which we're not interested in. And then the third one is systems must communicate across providers and borders. So without this, innovation becomes very fragmented and really can't scale. And so how governments regulation must create a friendlier environment for digital health. And that is that governments must shift from regulators to active enablers of innovation. So this means regulatory sandboxes, fast-tracked approvals for low-risk technologies, and encouraging public-private partnerships. This is really important. And the private sector brings speed. Governments bring same scale. Both are required. So it's somewhat challenging in my experience through Nigeria at the moment, Rwanda, where there tends not to be a great public-private environment for innovators such as myself. And the question comes, we want to own it. Governments want to own everything. Again, if you're going to bring in innovators, you can't own it because there's IP. So I think that's a really important conversation that needs to go into the realms of government. We can work with you, but you can't own it. The IP belongs to the innovators. So basically, you're licensing artificial intelligence. What we are looking to do, and we're in advanced conversations on this, is to teach specifically youth and women through the MasterCard Foundation on artificial intelligence in healthcare. So how we can assist in teaching the youth to become entrepreneurs of artificial intelligence, because this is the way that healthcare is going. So it's very exciting to be able to partner with the youth to be able to get them ready for the exciting future of artificial intelligence within healthcare.
Interesting. You know, you stated something very profound, and that is public-private engagement.
Mm.
And I'm sure that you had various experiences with various governments across Africa.
Yes.
And also with various businesses as well.
Yep.
The barriers still exist, even though the opportunities are significant. You know, I mean, in areas such as data availability, infrastructure, clinical trust, or adopting AI-driven healthcare solutions, you know, keeping your intellectual property. How can partnership between government and businesses help overcome these challenges?
It's a really good question, and I'm still chewing on it, to be honest with you. So I think the way we're looking to do it at the moment is to actually teach governments, teach the youth to develop what we've developed. So this is one way through. So we're actually teaching the youth how to develop what we've developed. So we'll teach them, you know, from start to finish. It's not the most ideal way, obviously, because this is our IP. But if it's transformational, which it is, there's no point if we can't make a way through. So that's one way of doing it. The other way, somebody told me a few months ago, is that you tell the governments you can own it, but then they're not really owning it. So that's not quite how I would work. But I think there's a way that they can own part of what you're doing, but the intellectual property should really remain with the innovators. So I think it's got to be a win-win situation. But I understand that governments tend to want to own everything. But if you go into the NHS in the UK, we use technology from Philips, from, you know, Cisco. They don't have to own it. They're just buying it, licensing it, and it's being maintained by the innovators. And I think, you know, this is the way to go. It scales up very quickly. You don't have the hassle, right? If you don't know about the product and you don't know about artificial intelligence, you really need the experts to come alongside. So why not get into the market quickly, let the experts handle all the back end and all the technology side, and just start using it and seeing the benefit. This is the way you can be ahead of the curve. And I think this is really important, not to get left behind. Some of the solutions I've talked to you about today are completely new across the globe, right? The AI predictive is nowhere except one country. So this is a tremendous opportunity to scale up globally. The AI health assessments has 52 million customers globally, but we just don't have it adopted yet in most African countries. So again, we need to catch up. It's real quick to catch up. And by the way, this takes us as an organization less than 24 hours to plug and play into any system. So this is not, you don't have to build anything, it's done, it's ready to go. And so it's stepping out of the boat onto the water. And by the way, you can try it for free with us. So, you know, you can get in touch with us, you can try it for free, no obligations at all. And then you try before you buy.
Wow. I'm pretty certain that there are a number of people listening who would be very happy to take you up on that offer.
Yeah.
You know, and you said some very critical things, you know, in comparing how it works in other countries and, you know, outside of Africa and within Africa. Let me just ask you, Katrina, in what ways can governments create a more enabling environment for digital health innovation, especially in Africa?
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, the only way I have been able to do it is obviously contact the decision makers and present. So I think it's important to get in front of the right people. Although it's software, it can all be done digitally. We can do it over the internet and demonstrate, of course, over the internet. But I think it's just important for governments to meet. They need to budget. I think this is really important in this conversation. They need to budget for bringing in new solutions, and so and budget adequately. So there's no point in going to see a government who says, "Wow, this is great," and they start chasing you and running around, and they've got absolutely no budget, and say, "Well, isn't it free?" I mean, no, it isn't free. So I think we need to be very realistic and make sure that governments put aside funding. And for innovators like myself, how it has worked is the governments need to express interest. So an LOI is great, an MOU is better, and potentially to start giving orders, which then somebody like myself, we can go out to market and go to some of the big funders to help support governments. So there is funding there. There's funding within governments, but if you haven't got enough as a government, then there are entities that can support innovation because the results are staggering.
Okay, Katrina, let us now broaden the lens to examine how these innovations are shaping healthcare access and competitiveness across the regions. Specifically, how has technology, particularly AI and telemedicine, transformed the way patients access doctors and specialists across Africa's diverse regions? Additionally, how has this impacted health outcomes, especially in the rural or underserved communities?
Yeah, the underserved are really very important. So AI and telemedicine have fundamentally democratized healthcare across Africa. It's very important to mention that with the pandemic, as we discussed, I think the world was just caught off guard and we were not ready. And telemedicine has been a bit of a slow burn, certainly in Nigeria. It's a little bit wider, broader in Rwanda and Kenya, perhaps. But it's very, very key to look ahead. So patients in underserved areas can now, through our technology, of course, access consultations remotely. So getting ready for the next pandemic is very, very important. So telemedicine works for that. I haven't checked, but I read some data recently that the Strait of Hormuz carries pharmaceuticals into Africa. I'm sure I've read it recently. Now, that's a major issue for you guys right now. Where are our pharmaceuticals? Are they going to get through? So again, using telemedicine to see the patient, but also making sure that we haven't got just one route to market. So one route is sitting with a doctor in a clinic. No, we need another route, which is using telemedicine. So again, looking at how we can leverage it for our benefit. So patients in underserved areas, of course, now can access consultations remotely, be screened without traveling long distance, and receive earlier interventions. And this is the important part for artificial intelligence, is preventative health. So yes, we've discussed that. I think what's important to consider, certainly with us, as I explained to us earlier about reducing maternal mortality, this technology is life-saving. Let's just, I don't know whether the listeners are aware, but people are dropping dead suddenly, right? If you look at how many people are dropping dead suddenly on the football pitch, on the rugby pitch, wherever, these are athletes dropping dead suddenly. Why? Because they don't know what their health is. And not all of us can afford these watches, but anyway, the watches that show us our heartbeat doesn't tell me whether that's any good, or is it too high? Is it too low? What is it? I have no idea. So it doesn't educate the patients. So a part of what we do is there is education on the reading, so you know what the heck it means. And also we are developing software right now to engage both ways. So not only will we be reading your health, but you'll be letting us know what you have been doing so that the artificial intelligence can put that in the mix. So, for instance, I went for a 2 mile walk today. I gave up, I don't know, wine for 3 days. So all this intelligence can go in and give you a very personal view. This is not saying we're doctors, but it can start acting with your smart devices, your smartphone, your input. What are you putting into it? And this is now becoming a really interesting area for technology. So I think hopefully that answers your question.
Yes, it does actually. And it now leads me to another question that I would like to ask.
Please.
There are a lot of AI-driven solutions popping up across the continent. From your perspective, can you share a standout example of an AI or telemedicine solution that excites you from an impact perspective, and how similar innovations are reducing costs for patients while remaining financially sustainable for providers? A long one.
It's a long one. So, pr pretty much what we do. I mean, obviously, I have to be excited about what we do. The one that really jumps out is the AI eye predictive software. So it's completely offline. So what does that mean? We can go and screen people in remote areas that may never have seen an eye doctor, and this can be used by untrained staff. We've got two devices, so one would need a nurse, but another would be completely untrained, and we can scan. So the technology will enable, as I said, to be able to see and predict any issues. At that point, of course, the patient is then directed to the care that they need. They need an eye specialist. Fine. We would direct them, or the company would direct them to those eye specialists. But what's really interesting is being able to scan mass numbers. For organizations that provide food and nutrition to the undernourished, what we have at the moment is we have an offline system, so it's all done on paper. That needs to be automated, right? So when you're pouring money in, funders, philanthropists are pouring money into areas of need, great need across Africa, where we're feeding the undernourished. What we need to look at is the health of the caregiver. So that's sometimes the parent, of course, or it may be somebody else in the family. What's the health of them? So we can scan them, and we can also scan the youngsters as well, to see whether the food that we're providing is changing their health. Really key. Why is it changing? Is it changing? What can we do? So pouring money into projects is incredible, and it's an incredible thing to do. But I think we need to monitor how it's affecting. So again, using the first product that we talked about, the AI health assessments, what we'd love to do is to do a pilot to enable the funders to really realize, wow, we're making such a difference. It's not just about the food. The health of the individual is shifting and changing, and that's I think something that would be really honourable to be able to say we're feeding, 10 million, and out of that, 9 million or whatever, their general health is improving, and it's something that obviously it needs to be digitalised, very, very important, and so we can do that, and we'd be looking to partner with organizations that we can do that for them. Just makes it a full circle, as opposed to just handing out food, which is incredible, but just digitalizing the system, you'll be able to see more. I've done all the research on this. You'll be able to see huge amounts in a shorter space of time, using artificial intelligence to do very simple, tablet kind of tick boxes. It doesn't need to be, hugely sophisticated, so that everybody can use it. Anybody can use it. It's just touch here, touch there, and then you can digitalize these kinds of operations.
I totally agree with you, Katrina. And I'm not the only one. There are thousands of stakeholders who completely buy into your school of thought and are actually, moving their operations in that direction. I'm going to ask you a question. How important is cross-border scaling for the success of African digital health startup? And how can African health tech entrepreneurs effectively compete or collaborate with global technology players?
Yes, cross-border scaling is essential. So no single market provides enough scale to achieve strong economics, build robust AI systems, and attract major investments. So African companies must, and by the way, we have an office in Lagos, we have an office in Kigali, and we're looking to open up in Nairobi. So it's very important. So African companies must solve local problems deeply. Scale regionally and align with global standards. So rather than competing directly with global tech giants, we need to own local distribution and understanding and partner on underlying technology where needed. So Africa's advantage is proximity to real-world challenges, and that's extremely powerful.
As we begin to wrap this up, it is important to look ahead and consider what the future holds for AI-driven healthcare in Africa. So, to this end, what shifts do you anticipate in Africa's AI and telemedicine space over the next 5 to 10 years? And if you could implement one policy change immediately to accelerate progress, what would that change be?
Oh, it's a great question. So the pandemic showed us something very clear that we were not prepared, as I said earlier. So lives were lost because people simply could not access healthcare in time. So we cannot allow this to happen again. So over the next 5 to 10 years, we will see AI as the first touch point of care before any doctor visit, screening, and triage will happen digitally. This is my prediction. We'll fully integrate health ecosystems, so screening, telemedicine, medical records, operating as one system. As I said to you, this is very, very a great challenge across Africa. We must join the dots, and I believe in the next 5 to 10 years we will. So real-time population health intelligence. So governments moving from reactive decision making to live monitoring and early intervention. Let me give you an example of potentially NHIA or for Rwanda RSSB. This is the insurance for the nation. What, how transformational would it be if either of those organizations had the data for every individual that is registered on their database? How easy would it be then for governments to deploy limited resources to north-north, let's say in Nigeria? We're seeing lots of heart attacks. We've got limited resources, but let's plow them into the north-north. South-south, we're seeing something else. Plow the resources, limited resources in the right areas. So I think real-time population health intelligence is the way forward. Preventative health, of course, is key. We touched on virtual hospitals. I think this is going to be utilized much more globally. But looking further ahead, and this is where it becomes transformative, is we will see AI-powered national health command centers where anonymized data from millions of people provides real-time insight into emerging health risks. This is powerful. We'll also see continuous passive health monitoring where individuals are supported daily, not just when they're sick. And this is where instead of running to the doctors, we are going to be taking some form of participation, some form of some way engaging with our own health. And we tend to run to the doctor instead of taking some form of responsibility. And ultimately, we'll see healthcare shift from a place to go to something that is embedded into every life, everyday life rather. So in terms of the policy change, which you mentioned, it's a great question. I could be here for days on that one. But if I could just make one change tomorrow, I think it would be a fast track, a unified approval framework for non-diagnostics AI tools across Africa. This would unlock scale almost immediately.
Yes, totally. I hear what you're saying, Katrina. And I actually have two final questions.
Yes, please.
I'm going to wrap them up in one and they speak to each other. So the first one is your personal experience as a Caucasian woman in Africa's very interesting operational landscape. Can you share some highlights, some lessons, and some advice? And then what message would you share with young innovators entrepreneurs, and medical professionals interested in contributing to Africa's healthcare transformation?
Yes, great questions. So being Caucasian and working through Africa, I've been working with Africa for about the past 20, 25 years. So I don't really look at my color as an issue or whatever, but it can be a challenge sometimes. But I think obviously my partners and key stakeholders in country are obviously African, and so we work as a great partnership. So I think it's hopefully it's great. So we bring a good mix into the ecosystem. But in terms of what message to share with young innovators and entrepreneurs and medical professionals, a great question. I think we need to focus on real world impact and not health. I think we need to focus on real world impact, not hype. So Africa needs solutions that work in low resource settings, scale efficiently, and deliver measurable outcomes. So I think it's really important. We need to understand what's the impact on the community and how can this affect the community and shift and change things. So this is really, really important. So for innovators, those are the questions that we'll be asking ourselves. But most importantly, building with responsibility and integrity. Healthcare is human, and those who get this right will not just build companies, they'll reshape the future of healthcare across Africa. And that really is my message to the youth, that you are the next generation to reshape the future. And it's very, very exciting. And yeah, I think companies like myself must support as much as possible the youth to generate and shift and change as the days and years go by.
Okay, thank you very much, Katrina, for an exceptionally insightful and forward-looking discussion. There is no doubt that your perspectives have clearly articulated both the transformative potential of artificial intelligence in advancing affordable, high-quality healthcare across Africa and the systemic considerations required to scale these innovations effectively. What emerges from this conversation is a critical imperative. The future of healthcare in Africa will be shaped not only by the adoption of advanced technologies, but by the strength of the enabling ecosystem. And this is robust data governance frameworks, interoperable digital infrastructure, forward-thinking regulation, and sustained investment in human capital. AI, when deployed within this coordinated framework, can serve as a powerful catalyst for improving clinical outcomes, optimizing health system efficiency, and expanding equitable access to care at scale. At ABC Health, we remain committed to driving this agenda by fostering strategic partnerships, convening key stakeholders, and advancing policies that support innovation while safeguarding quality, safety, and inclusivity across the healthcare value chain. On behalf of the African Business Coalition for Health, I would like to extend our sincere appreciation to you, Katrina, for sharing your expertise and practical insight. We also thank our audience for joining us and engaging with this important conversation on the future of healthcare in Africa. We look forward to continuing this dialogue and to deepening collaboration across sectors to unlock the full potential of AI-driven healthcare innovation on the continent. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in and being part of this important dialogue. Until next time, thank you. Katrina, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for ABC Health. Thank you for Dr. Morris. Thank you, Adekunle. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to speak to your listeners today. Thank you.
Likewise, same here. Please, one second.